Okay, we're talking with former WTMA good guy, Terry Allen. Now, Terry, you were at WTMA for a good long time. When did you start at the Nifty 1250?
Well, John, let's see. It was May of 65. I came in and interviewed with Doug Randall, and I was hired to do 9 to noon, and I did some weekends. I used to take the bus to work every day. I didn't have a car or anything. I used to take the bus and get off and walk to the Church Street offices. It was the most exciting time of my life.
How old were you then?
I had just turned, I think I was 18.
And you started as
19.
And you started as a full-time WTMA guy?
Full-time, part-time pay.
You were on every day.
I was on every day for 3 hours every day. I mean, I was in between my heroes, my legends. I followed Doug Randall and right before Jim Diamond, I think he was doing a split shift then.
Who did you replace?
I think his name was Johnny Long or Johnny Day. It was one of the two. I stayed in that slot for about through the summer, and then I went on to weekends and became the weekend warrior, which is what I kept for many years.
How long were you at WTMA?
I was at TMA till about 67, and I went in the Air Force, and Vietnam was going on then. And when I got out, I came back, and then I worked some more weekend work, but this time it was for John Trenton, and I was with TMA when they made the move from Dock Street to Number One Radio Park down at the transmitter site.
Now, was that exciting?
Oh, yeah, it was, because...
a lot more room, huh?
Well, not only more room, but it was a brand new facility, really. We had some of the same equipment. John had painted the control board. He did a lot of painting on his own cars. I think he did that type of work, and he made it look absolutely beautiful. We made the move. We used some of the same equipment, but yes, you're absolutely right. We had a big room, windows all around us. It was we're a little more isolated at the end of that road, but from the rear of the building, we had a beautiful view of the Ashley River and the marsh. I mean, it was prime old real estate.
Now, that was 1969, right?
1969, right.
I guess the neighborhood around there, was that out there then?
Minimally. There were some houses out in that area, but they hadn't built it up the way it is today.
So you weren't really out in the country?
No. We were just at the end of Orange Grove Road, and it was kind of a cool place. We could turn the sound up. That's one of the biggest things. When we were in the building with the Dock Street Theater, we had a governor on our monitor, because when they would have plays in the Dock Street Theater, sometimes we would hear through the grapevine that there would be complaints because the music in the radio station was too loud. So they put a governor on our sound, and we couldn't crank it up. But at the end of Orange Grove Road, we didn't have that limit. We could actually have a much louder in-studio monitor.
Do you remember how much you were making at WTMA?
Seems like $1.35 an hour when I started in 65. If that was the minimum wage. It was minimum. It was the absolute bottom. Back when they moved to the new building, I think I might have made $5 or $6 an hour, but not much more than that. But it really wasn't about the money. Obviously, I had expenses, but it was just the most fun you could have in a job, because you were doing what you loved and playing the music you loved. And back in those days, you handled the records, you handled the cartridges with the commercials and the jingles, you actually punched the buttons, you queued up the records. There was a degree of talent involved as far as coordination, and it was just more fun, I think, than what I think is going on today.
I know what you mean. It was a lot more fun for me to actually run the board. I mean, that was part of being on the air, and now there's not so much of that you have to do because of the computers and stuff.
Right.
You know, I don't really miss records that much, but I do miss playing CDs on the air.
The cue burn, the scratchiness at the beginning of a record, was something we all got used to accepting. That would never be accepted today. You could tell how big a hit a record was by the amount of cue burn at the beginning when it started, or the scratchiness at the very beginning. It was a different time. TMA was the station, and it wasn't WTMA. It was TMA, or the mighty TMA. We were the good guys. There was actually status as personalities.
Did you get recognized when you were out and about?
Not so much visually, but name recognition, Terry Allen. I still run into people today, even today. I meet young ladies today, and they will say, "Oh, yeah, my mother used to listen to you on TMA." It was a great time. I wouldn't trade it for the world, and I kind of wish some of the on-air personalities today could have had a taste of that, because it was an era that's gone. But in my mind, I always relive it. It was just awesome.
All right, I'm going to run some names past you. Tell me about these people, what you remember about these people. John Trenton.
John Trenton, total professional all the way. John was my boss at TMA. He went by the book, 125%. Truly an awesome morning man. I remember one morning, I don't know what record I played or how I came to play it, but I played something and phone rang the hotline, which was always a moment of fear and quaking, and it was John Trenton. He says, "Take that off right away. We don't play that crap on WTMA." And I can't remember what it was I played, but it registers in my mind that, he's listening always, always, always there. I learned a lot from John. He sat me down and talked to me and gave me career guidance for the future. He was a great mentor, great mentor.
What about Doug Randall?
Doug Randall, the morning mayor. I was basically awestricken by him. He had done television dance party called The Village something, or it was on one of the local TV stations. So he was visually recognizable as well. And he hired me to do the 9 to noon. And I remember I went in one morning and I had this piece of information that I thought I alone knew. It was something that was going to be happening in Charleston. And I said, "Doug, did you know this?" And he says, "Of course I knew that." I said, "Well, how'd you know it?" He says, "That's why I'm the program director." He was great. He, too, was very instrumental in my early years, giving me advice and guidance.
Booby Nash.
Booby Nash. Oh, gosh. The most fun listening to the radio. I was there when Booby Nash arrived. He came into the station like a whirlwind. He used a lot of drop-ins and sounds on his show. First day he was there, he got us all around and said, "I want you guys to do this and say this," and because he liked to redo his drops and his crowd noises whenever he went to a new station. There was a television program at that point on Channel 5, WCSC-TV, and it was called Midday, I believe, and the host was Carol Godwin, very popular on-air personality. And somehow, we got started a good-natured, tongue-in-cheek feud between Carol Godwin on the show and Booby Nash at night, and they would make good-natured jabs back and forth at each other on their shows. And then somehow we arranged that on one particular day, and they promoted the heck out of this, that Booby Nash was going to come on the Carol Godwin show, and they were going to meet for the very first time. And on the day appointed, I had the job of getting Boob down to the station. He didn't have a car, and he didn't even have a tie for some reason. He came by my house, and we put a tie on him, drove him to Channel 5, got him into the studio. Carol Godwin was already on the air, and then with a great deal of fanfare, we paraded Boob out into the lights, onto camera, onto the Carol Godwin set. And Boob's a short guy, and Carol's a tall guy, and Boob went in with guns blazing, and Carol Godwin was the consummate gentleman. He never lost his cool, never barbed back at Boob, and it was just a great conclusion to a promotion that I'm sure had a great audience for Channel 5 that particular day. Boob, he was new to Charleston radio in the sense that he brought humor, good-natured fun to an evening program, that on top of the music, you always wanted to see what Boob would say next. He was funny. He was good-natured, always on the cutting edge, and clean as a whistle. I mean, you could never fault him for ever saying anything that would be off color. He was probably one of the most remembered disc jockeys in WTMA history.
Who else do you remember made an influence or an impact?
Danny Knox. Before I became a TMA good guy, I would call him at night on the phone and talk to him. I was just awed by the disc jockey persona. This is what I wanted to be. I worked with Danny Knox. He was awesome, had a great voice. Then when I came in, Jim Diamond, who was an awesome personality. I mean, he had the disc jockey persona and voice down cold. He was Mr. Excitement. Charlie Bird Lindsay, he and I became close. He was definitely a mentor to me. I think he was head announcer, or as close as you can be in that capacity, under Doug Randall. He was terrific. I still have some air checks of him to this very day and enjoy listening to him when he's still on the radio. He's matured, but it's still Charlie Bird Lindsay.
All right, when you left WTMA in 69, where'd you go?
WQSN. And it was actually around the corner from where I lived. It had been a competitor of TMA, went to, I think, a country format, and then attempted to go back to a top 40 format. And I worked there as a DJ, on-air personality, and music director for a while.
What do you remember most about WTMA? If I could pick one great memory or one great feeling associated with your time at WTMA, What would it be?
It would be just the excitement of being on the air, playing the music that I loved, and just having the ability to control the board, the jingles, the commercials. I mean, I used to play disc jockey before I became a disc jockey. I used to have a turntable in the house, and I would read commercials, and I would play records. I mean, it wasn't a job. It was a dream come true. It really was. And every day for me was like that. Sure, there were great times when I would go out and do appearance with the other guys, and you would get recognized. That was great. That was great, too. But actually being on the air, doing the contests, listening to the totally excited voices of the people that won these contests, it's unbelievable. I remember before I became a DJ, and I listened to TMA all the time, I won a Beatle wig on the Jim Diamond show. So I got to see it from both sides as an excited winner, and then as the DJ giving that gift to someone else. It was just an experience like none other that I've never experienced since. It was, as they say, the most fun you can have standing up, dressed.
What about WTMA? What do you think it's meant to Charleston?
I believe WTMA, in the beginning, from the very, very beginning, it was the entertainment medium to Charleston. I mean, it had some of the finest personalities. Sure, there were other great stations, but WTMA seemed to progress. It was music, it was information, it was entertainment. They always had the best entertainers. And then as they evolved from music to talk radio, which is where they are now, they assume that next step. They provide news, information, and they today still have the finest personalities, as far as I'm concerned. It's Charleston's radio station. It always has been.